Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another edition of KHOI Community Radio's Capital Week, your listening post for politics, Iowa style, where we explore and analyze who's been making news in and around the state capital, what that news is, and what it all means. We're glad you're with us. I'm Dennis Hart, joined as always by my partner in politics, Laura Bellin, of the blog site Bleeding Heartland. Laura, here we go again. Welcome.
Good to be here, Dennis.
You know, Laura, we have only 5 weeks away now from the general election, and there's plenty of campaigning still to come around Iowa. But we begin tonight with word that the state of Iowa announced a giant budget surplus last week, one that Republicans applauded and one that Democrats were, let's just say, less than happy about.
Yes, the state fiscal year ends on June 30th, but they closed the books on the fiscal year on September 30th, and that's why the final budget surplus numbers were announced last week. $1.9 billion, that's a record by a lot. Last year's $1.2 billion was already a record. So this is substantially more than 50% more than last year. The governor's office was very pleased. They took credit for the wise budgeting practices and tax policies. And because the state revenues are so much higher than was expected, the corporate tax rate is going to drop very soon when it wasn't scheduled to happen until later this decade. Now, the Democrats, as you mentioned, said that this is basically a result of the governor hoarding federal funds that came in during the COVID pandemic, and especially American Rescue Plan funds that Congress approved last year, which the governor opposed, and that's the main reason why Iowa has the surplus and that we should be investing some of these surplus funds into more public services like education and clean water.
Right. Democrats said the state GOP has been passing tax cuts that favor the wealthy and corporations more than everyday Iowans.
Yes. And the individual tax cuts that were approved last year, those are going to go into effect regardless of what the revenues are. But some of the corporate tax cuts were set to trigger to go into effect only when revenues hit a certain point. But once they're in effect, they will stay in effect. And so the concern is that later this decade, when the American Rescue Plan money runs out and the tax cuts are fully phased in, is Iowa going to be able to sustain its budget on a much lower revenue coming in from individual income taxes and corporate taxes?
How do you think this surplus might play into various campaigns around the state?
I think that it's mainly going to be an issue in the governor's campaign. I expect to see a campaign ad about it. It's something that she talks about a lot on the stump. And again, takes credit for the Republican budgeting policies. The truth is that the around the country, most states are enjoying large budget surpluses right now for the same reason. It's because of the massive influx of federal funding during the coronavirus pandemic, and especially last year, the American Rescue Plan. It was a lot of money. It was substantially larger than the stimulus bill that was passed in 2009 during what they call the Great Recession in the first year of the Obama administration.
The governor certainly made plenty of news last week. Among those news stories, her lawyer arguing that Iowa courts should lift the injunction on the state's fetal heartbeat abortion law. Let's try to download that a little bit.
Yes. So the state is being represented by private attorneys in this matter because Attorney General Tom Miller said that he didn't want to take this on. He doesn't believe that this 2018 abortion ban is constitutional, and he doesn't believe it should come back into effect. So the private attorneys, they filed their initial motion in August, which we discussed at that time. Then the ACLU of Iowa, which is representing Planned Parenthood, submitted their reply brief early this month. So what happened last week was the state's attorneys submitted their final reply to the reply. So they said basically that this law, the 2018 law that would ban most abortions after a heartbeat can be detected, it should never have been struck down. It was struck down in 2019 under precedents from the U.S. Supreme Court and Iowa Supreme Court that are no longer in effect and have been overturned. And so that is the crux of the argument. There are a couple of other finer legal points about the standard of legal review and so on, but that's the main argument they're making, that the court shouldn't have put an injunction on this law. And now that that Roe v. Wade has been overturned, Casey has been overturned, and in Iowa, the 2018 abortion rights precedent has been overturned, there's absolutely no reason not to let this abortion ban from 2018 go into effect.
We say this almost every show, but abortions in Iowa are illegal up to 20 weeks of pregnancy. If this fetal heartbeat law were somehow reinstated, it would cap abortions at about 6 weeks.
and it would not be reinstated anytime extremely soon. The district court is going to have a hearing on this on October 28th. It will take some weeks or months for the district court to rule. And then the losing side is certain to appeal that to the Iowa Supreme Court. And it would be months of briefing and oral arguments. So realistically, the Iowa Supreme Court would not be ruling on whether to reinstate this law until probably sometime late next spring or summer.
A lot of Republicans running across the country are now moderating their stances on abortion as the election comes forward, moderating the idea that a national abortion ban might be passed by Congress. Among them, U.S. Senator Joni Ernst and Republican Congresswoman Ashley Hinson of Iowa, among Republicans last week who said they would keep federal abortion funding in cases of rape, incest, or the life of the pregnant woman.
Well, this was a strange story because the headline said Republicans say they'd keep federal abortion funding in cases of rape and incest. But when you look at the story, what Senator Ernst and Representative Hinson actually said was they don't think that taxpayer funds should be funding abortion, period. The Hyde Amendment, which has been in effect since 1976, says that federal funds can't be spent on abortion, which primarily would happen through the Medicaid program, with very few exceptions, as you said, rape, incest, or life of the pregnant person. So it's not really clear what I would like to nail down what Senator Ernst's stance really is on that. The quote that I saw said that she is for keeping the Hyde Amendment, but that she said no taxpayer dollars should be going toward abortion. I should say that Representative Hinson and also Representative Marionette Miller-Meeks, they have really been hitting back every time their Democratic opponents accuse them of wanting a total ban on abortion. They have been out there saying, no, we support exceptions in the case of rape, incest, or life of the mother. They have said that. It happened again in the debate, which I know we're going to get to in a little bit. But this is something that they want to be very clear. They do not want voters to get the impression that they're for an abortion ban with no exceptions.
Governor made some other news last week, along with the governors of five other Republican-led states. They are suing the Biden administration to stop its plan to forgive student debt loan for tens of millions of Americans and hundreds of thousands of Iowans.
Yes, I read the court filing in this, and the biggest question is going to be whether the states are found to even have standing to bring this lawsuit at all. There are a lot of things in the brief about how this law, that the Biden administration misapplied this law from the early 2000s, that it wasn't intended for this kind of a situation, and that they shouldn't be using the pandemic as a reason for student loan relief. But the basic bar you have to clear when you go to court is you have to show that you are an injured party. You have to show that the action, the government action you're challenging, did something that harmed you. And that is going to be a problem potentially for the states, because the argument that they're making is that, at least in the case of Iowa and several of the other states, that they're going to lose future tax revenue because people are going to have student loans forgiven that would have been part of their gross taxable income several years from now, and so on. And I follow a lot of legal people on Twitter, and there was a lot of back and forth last week about whether a federal court is even going to accept this as a basis for a lawsuit, that if a possible future loss of tax revenue is not an injury that you have suffered right now. So the legal term for this is that it might be considered that it's not ripe for consideration. So I am not sure that this lawsuit has legs, but certainly it's something the governor was happy to talk about, put out a news release. And I think that she will be talking about it probably when she's campaigning around the state later this month as well.
We're going to stay on a national level with an Iowa connection for just a couple of more minutes. Last week, the Iowan who grabbed an officer's wrist while another person tased the officer during that insurrection at the U.S. Capitol, January 2021, sentenced to more than 7 years in prison, Kyle Young of Redfield, one of the longest sentences anybody's been given. He's one of three people in the dock, at least, from Iowa. Kyle Young, Kenneth Rader of Sioux City, and, of course, Doug Jensen found guilty a week or so ago.
Yes, and Doug Jensen hasn't been sentenced yet. As you mentioned, Kyle Young was just sentenced to more than 7 years, and the sentencing judge had some very harsh words for him. He handed a taser to somebody, another rioter who didn't know how to use it. The judge said you had to even show him how to turn it on, and it could have been anticipated that this would cause harm. And one of the officers who was injured did testify at the sentencing hearing, and he actually was hoping for a 10-year prison sentence, not 7 years. But he said this what happened on January 6th wrecked my career and severely damaged his health. So this is a very long prison sentence. The attorney representing this Kyle Young was trying to say he's remorseful. He's not ever going to do this again. He just wants to go back to his family and not be involved in politics at all. But the judge was not having any of that. The other person you mentioned, Kenneth Rader of Sioux City, he was sentenced to just 90 days. What he did was much less serious. He entered the Capitol building. He was there for a while and he left, but there was no evidence. There was no video evidence that he physically assaulted any of the officers. And that's why he was only sentenced to 90 days rather than a period of many months or years.
And staying on the court beat, but coming a little closer to Iowa, essentially Des Moines, attorneys for Piper Lewis were asked a Polk County judge last week to overturn part of her sentence that ordered her, you'll recall, to pay $150,000 in restitution to the estate of her rapist. This very well-known story in the last few weeks around Iowa.
Yes, this became viral news. It became national news when Piper Lewis was sentenced. She had pled guilty to lesser offenses after initially being charged with first-degree murder. And Iowa has a law in the books that says if you are convicted of a felony that causes the death of another person, you must pay restitution to that person's estate of at least $150,000. And that's why the court ordered that as part of her sentence. Other than that, she wasn't sentenced to prison. She's going to serve probation. But she was 15 years old when this happened. She was below the age of consent. And the person she killed was well beyond the age when this would be considered a rape situation. So what her lawyers are going to argue is that she shouldn't be ordered to pay this restitution because the person she killed should be considered to be at least 51% responsible for his own death. So that she should be, the court should, it's a little bit of a complicated legal issue, but that's what they'll be arguing about, whether she is mostly responsible for his death or whether he bears a large share of the responsibility. If the court finds that he does, then she wouldn't have to pay that restitution. But the GoFundMe that was set up by one of her former teachers has already raised more than $500,000, so well beyond what would be needed to pay that restitution if that is the ultimate court's judgment.
And before we get into the third congressional district race and all the things that happened last week, let me say it's 12 and a half after the hour. Wherever you're listening to us, and you are in tune with KHOI Radio's Capital Week, your one-stop source for everything political going on in Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart with Laura Bellin, and we're here every week at this time to talk politics Iowa style and how it's affecting all of us. Okay, the third district congressional race. What an interesting race. Well, they all are. But this one, a new poll came out last week. This is the race involving Cindy Axne, the Democratic incumbent, versus Republican Zach Nunn. A new poll came out, an internal poll, showing Nunn leading Axne by a couple of percentage points, well within the margin of error. But there you have it. There's the new poll.
Yes, and 46% to 44% with 10% undecided. That's a pretty high undecided number for this late in the campaign. So it could go either way. I mean, the political strategists will tell you that if you're 2 points ahead, it's much better to be 49 to 47% rather than 46 to 44, because you want that undecided number to be lower. Remember, there are no third party candidates in this race. The last several election cycles, there have always been at least one third party candidate on the ballot, but that is not going to be the case this year. Everyone is expecting a close race. I think, and I've said it before, I'm just going to be a broken record, I think, every week until the election. Modeling the electorate is going to be really difficult. All of these polls now are surveying what they call likely voters, and pollsters have different ways of establishing who's a likely voter, but a lot of it depends on who's willing to pick up and answer the phone and respond to a poll like this, and we just don't know. In the Kansas referendum, it turned out that the electorate turned out to be more Democratic than they were expecting. And conversely, in the 2020 elections, many of the polls, including in Iowa, were off, and it turned out that they were underestimating the support for Republicans. So we just don't really know who's going to show up to vote on November 8th.
You make a very good point. Republicans, and there have been numerous stories about this in the national media, have been more reluctant to pick up the phone, talk to pollsters in recent elections than Democrats.
It's been a growing problem for the whole polling industry for the last 10 or 15 years, especially since most people now have some kind of caller ID, and people just don't pick up the phone for unknown numbers. Now, I do pick up the phone for unknown numbers because I like to hear what polls are in the field. And also there could be somebody with a tip for a story for me, but most people are not like me and they just don't pick up the phone. So that is a big issue, and it could be affecting the polls. Now, it doesn't prove that the polls are off in one direction or another. That's what we don't know. In 2018, the polls were relatively accurate, at least more than they were in the 2020 campaign.
Yeah. By the way, Laura, you are not a broken record. I think in the more modern terminology, a broken CD.
Okay.
A more important issue perhaps for Cindy Axne last week was not this poll. That was an internal poll. But an issue. Was she vacationing in Europe during that key House of Representatives vote on the Inflation Reduction Act? The answer seems to be clearly yes.
Yes, I think that Cindy Axne doesn't dispute that she was. This is a story that broke last week. Fox News broke the story online that the Senate never actually instituted proxy voting, but the House, since the beginning of the COVID pandemic, has allowed proxy voting. If members can't be there in person, they can assign somebody to vote for them. And Cindy Axne designated one of the other House Democrats to cast her vote. But at the time, I follow her social media, and she didn't disclose at the time that she was vacationing overseas when this vote was happening. Remember that nobody thought that the Democrats were going to be able to get this big budget reconciliation bill together. It all happened very quickly in late July. Suddenly, Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia agreed, and all of a sudden they had a deal within about 10 days. And so Cindy Axne, I saw her interview on WHO TV. Dave Price interviewed her about this after the story broke. And she said, look, we had this vacation plan for months. We were supposed to be on recess in August, and I wanted to make sure my constituents were represented. And so I designated someone to vote for me. But really, an issue that important, it probably would have been more advisable for her to fly home and cast that ballot in person.
So how big a deal is this going to be in the campaign?
Well, I think the question is how much money Republicans put behind telling voters about this, because not too many people saw the story last week. But often what happens is it's not the initial story that breaks, but if some outside group decides to put up a large television or radio ad by publicizing this, and I haven't seen one yet, but I do anticipate that this is probably going to be part of one. Zach Nunn has said he's against proxy voting and he would never use proxy voting. By the way, Dave Price of WHO, Channel 13 TV, he went and looked at the records of the other Iowans in Congress and found that Randy Feenstra of the 4th District has never used proxy voting, and neither has Ashley Hinson in that Northeast Iowa district. However, Marionette Miller-Meeks has used proxy voting 4 times, most recently only within the last couple of weeks. She designated somebody to vote for her.
So we have an interesting conundrum on this Thursday night. I love using big words on this broadcast, conundrum, kabuki theater. The conundrum is that at 7 o'clock on Thursday night on KCCI Channel 8, the Axne-Nunn debate is going to take place at the same moment that on Iowa PBS, Grassley and Franken in the U.S. senatorial campaign are also going to be debating, Laura.
I've heard a lot of grumbling about this. How did this happen that these were scheduled at the same time? But I will say that this is less of a conundrum now than it would have been 20 years before it was easy for people to watch replays of debates on the internet, because people are just going to have to make a choice about political junkies. Do they want to watch the Iowa PBS Senate debate, or do they want to watch the KCCI debate? I haven't decided yet, but I will certainly be watching one of them live and watching the other one on replay a little bit later in the evening.
Yeah, it all depends on what happens between now and Thursday as to which one we will be watching live. Yes, many things can happen. All right, let's talk about the District 1 debate that took place last Monday night, September 26th, this involving Republican incumbent Marionette Miller-Meeks and her Democratic opponent Christina Bohannon. And they sparred on abortion and the economy. Let's talk about that.
Yes, I was a high school debater, Dennis. I don't know if we've talked about that on the show. So I'm always interested in watching these candidate debates, I'm always interested in the tactics. And I felt that overall, just the overall preparation, it seemed like Christina Bohannon, she came in ready. She had her points that she was going to keep repeating over and over again. And of course, in the debates, people want to answer the question that was asked, but then right away pivot to the point that they wanted to make. And generally speaking, Marionette Miller Meeks looked a little bit less comfortable there. Christina Bohannon is a law professor, so she's used to speaking in front of groups. Marionette Miller Meeks, when she was in the Iowa Senate, she didn't get up and speak on the Senate floor very often. So just in general, she appeared a little bit less comfortable in the format. I think this is the only debate that they're going to have. Certainly, she's probably not going to agree to any more. But yes, abortion was something that came up several times. There were a lot of disagreements about inflation, about the bill, the Inflation Reduction Act that was just passed, about infrastructure spending. And one area where they both agreed there needs to be more bipartisan work on immigration reform, that was something where there was some common ground. And also both said that with respect to those carbon dioxide pipelines, that they don't support using eminent domain for the government to allow farmland to be seized for constructing these pipelines. But otherwise, it was a little bit of a contentious debate. It wasn't a very friendly exchange of ideas, I would say.
So we've got 5 weeks to go. How do you see this thing playing out?
Well, I think this is going to be close. I mean, the district is fairly balanced on paper, but again, in a midterm election year, usually that's good for the party out of power in Washington. And Miller Meeks does have the advantages of incumbency. So I think most election forecasters see this as a race where Miller Meeks is favored. Bohannon is talking a lot about abortion rights and her support for abortion. She is one of the points that she is raising continually is that Marionette Miller Meeks has said one thing, like for instance, she said she supported lowering insulin prices and she supported certain things, infrastructure spending, but then she voted against those bills when she had a chance. So that, I mean, Christina Bohannon probably has an uphill battle, but again, we don't really know what the electorate is going to look like out there. I did notice that Christina Bohannon is spending a fair amount of money on radio ads as well as TV. So I think she's probably reaching quite a lot of people in rural Iowa. So even though she's a University of Iowa law professor, she is definitely not neglecting the more rural parts of the district.
How will it play out? Well, you can tune in on election night. Laura and I were going to be right here. Yes. Giving you the latest election returns at 9 o'clock, an hour after the polls close. Okay. Want to talk about, again, as we did last week, Governor Reynolds' latest campaign ad. Normally, we would not revisit this because we did this last week, but yesterday, the Des Moines Register editorially called that ad racist, embarrassing, indefensible. And that's why we're talking about it tonight. Do you think, Laura, we don't have to go over the whole ad again. We've done that. Is this ad going to cause any erosion of Reynolds' support, or does it perfectly fit her supporters?
I haven't seen any Republicans criticize the ad, and I haven't seen outside of the media commentaries, I have not seen a lot of criticism of the ad. So I don't think that it's going to hurt the governor. It's interesting that it's still on the air. It's now been on the air for 10 or 11 days. And she certainly has a lot of money. So I think that if the governor's campaign perceived that this ad were hurting her, they would have pulled it already and they would have launched whatever they have in the can. This, by the way, in case anyone was wondering where this was filmed, it was at the Breadboard, which is a cafe in Pella, Iowa. Pella happens to be a very conservative town and also a fairly overwhelmingly white community.
I have eaten at the Breadboard in Pella. It's a very nice little place. Mm-hmm. All right. One of the governor's opponents put out a TV ad, well, actually a cable ad, a video ad last week. But no, it's not the Democrat, Deidre DeGeer. It's the Libertarian, Rick Stewart, who says in the campaign, "What the hell, Kim? Here I am in Illinois, why only a few miles from the Iowa border, and they've got legal cannabis." 60-second spot, he's talking about pot.
Yes. And for libertarians, that's probably a good issue to grab people's attention. The Des Moines Register's polling the last couple of years has shown that now a majority of Iowa adults think that marijuana should be legal recreationally as well. An overwhelming majority think that it should be legal for medicinal purposes. But this is why, as we talked about a few weeks ago, the Iowa House Democratic Caucus as a group came out in support of legalizing marijuana, regulating it, taxing it. It would be a win for the economy and it would prevent prevent right now. A lot of people are crossing the Mississippi and buying cannabis products in Illinois regularly. And so this is something, this is revenue that Iowa could be capturing. But libertarians in general, libertarians have been supporting legalizing marijuana for a long time. And so I think that it makes sense if Rick Stewart is trying to introduce himself to voters, it makes sense that this is the issue he would choose.
And Rick, of course, is the candidate who a few months ago asked Democrats to send him, quote, a bundle of hundies so yes. that he could run against Governor Reynolds more effectively. Maybe somebody did.
Your favorite. I don't think he's putting a lot of money behind this ad. Sometimes a very small ad buy can then generate a lot of free media coverage. Yeah. And it can reach more people through the media coverage than the actual ad buy.
But of course.
This may be what we're seeing.
A bundled hundies pertaining to $100 bills. Okay, now, well, Rick is out there with a TV ad. No sign of Deidre DeGeer, and she's the Democratic opponent.
I have not seen Deidre DeGeer. I have heard that she has filmed a TV ad, but I don't know exactly when it's going to be on the air. Right now, the only Iowa statewide candidate who has a TV ad going, actually a couple ones in rotation right now, would be Attorney General Tom Miller. He is advertising statewide, and I haven't seen anything from any of the other candidates. I do expect that State Auditor Rob Sand will probably be on TV sometime pretty soon here.
The governor and Deidre DeGeer are going to debate 2 weeks from tonight at 7 o'clock on Iowa PBS. Of course, people should record that and be listening to us, shouldn't they?
Yes.
Live. Okay.
Well, it's easy enough to watch the replay on the Iowa PBS website later.
Very quickly, Mike Pence in Iowa last week said he's going to decide on a presidential run next year. Again, we've talked about it. I just don't see an avenue for him at this point.
I think it's clear that he's running. If he sees any kind of a path for himself, I don't see why he wouldn't run. The fact that he's come to Iowa several times this year, people just don't do that when they're not seriously considering running for president.
Okay, let's go over some other issues. A judge for the third time in 5 years struck down the state legislature's efforts to criminalize the use of cameras in ag facilities and other businesses, the so-called ag gag laws.
Yes, this is confusing. Iowa has passed 4 ag gag laws since 2012, and 3 of the 4 have been struck down in part. So this is actually the 4th one. It's the 3rd ruling. It's the 4th law that was challenged. And what they did was they beefed up the trespassing law that already has been on the books. Of course, trespassing has been illegal for centuries, but they beefed it up that there were enhanced penalties for trespassing if you were doing audio or video recording. And that was the part that the federal judge, Stephanie Rose, said violated the First Amendment.
And if this seems confusing, stay tuned. It'll probably get even more confusing. Okay, Jerry Foxhoven back in the news again, the former Iowa Department of Human Services director last week, filing an appeal for the state Supreme Court to reconsider his wrongful termination lawsuit against Governor Reynolds.
Yes, he hasn't filed a brief. He filed a notice that he was going to appeal. So I'll be interested to see the arguments that his lawyer comes up with. The district court judge didn't decide the merits of his case, just said that he serves as an agency director. He served at the pleasure of the governor, and the governor has discretion. And whatever her reasons were, and even if his lawsuit argues that he was dismissed for an invalid reason in violation of public policy, the judge said that this wouldn't really matter because he just doesn't have the same kind of protections that other state employees do, because agency directors specifically serve at the pleasure of the governor. So that is the part that he's going to be appealing. And if he's successful in the Supreme Court would not be deciding his case on the merits. They would be sending it back to the district court to then hold a trial and decide it on the merits. So, or he may, if he loses in the Supreme Court, then the suit would be dismissed.
90 seconds. Summit Carbon Solutions, one of those companies wanting to build a carbon capture pipeline across Iowa, filed lawsuits against 3 sets of Northern Iowa landowners who want or trying to keep its agents from surveying their properties.
This is just a really hot button issue in rural Iowa, and people are upset. I mean, there is a state law that says that they have the right to survey the property. So I don't know how the courts are going to come down, but I'm sure that the people who are the landowners who are against these pipelines are not going to be happy about these lawsuits being filed against the like-minded landowners.
And 60 seconds left, the State Judicial Nominating Board interviewed candidates for an opening today.
Yes, the Iowa Supreme Court, the newest Justice David May previously served on the Court of Appeals. And so today they interviewed a dozen candidates for that vacancy on the Iowa Court of Appeals. That's the second highest court in the state. And they forwarded a list of five candidates to the governor. Two of them are the two finalists who were among the finalists for the Iowa Supreme Court vacancy who didn't get selected. That was William Miller and Alan Heavens. And then there are three others, two judges and another attorney in private practice. So we'll see. The governor has 30 days now to pick somebody for that vacancy on the Iowa Court of Appeals.
And quickly, what are you going to be looking for this week?
I'm going to be watching these debates. I'm going to be looking more at the ad spending, including in the state legislative races, the Iowa House and Senate races. We're starting to see the negative ads come out now. Usually they start with positive ads and some negative ads are already out. So I'll be looking at those and maybe we can discuss those next week.
And we will and more. We are out of time, though, for tonight. Hey, you have a great week, Laura.
You too, Dennis.
You've been listening to Capital Week on KHOI Community Radio. A reminder that the views and opinions expressed here did not necessarily reflect the opinions of KHOI or its staff. Laura and I will be back in this same time slot next week when we'll talk about everything interesting, important, or entertaining about politics, Iowa style. We hope you can join us. In the meantime, we hope you have a safe, healthy, and happy week.